Hi, I'm Matt Waller, Dean of the Sam M. Walton College of Business. Welcome to Be Epic, the podcast where we explore excellence, professionalism, innovation, and collegiality, and what those values mean in business, education, and your life today. Well, I'm really excited to be here with Dan Worrell, a person who's had a big impact on my life. And I was fortunate enough to be a professor here when he came as dean. And would you mind, Dan, just telling me a little bit about the story of when you came here and, you know, as a new dean coming from the outside, what do you do?
So the predecessor dean was a guy named Doyle Williams, who had been dean for many years here, and he was ready to transition. And so the college, the Walton College, decided to do a national search, which meant that the process for a successor was open to both internal and external candidates. I happened to be, at that time, a sitting dean at another university. So anyway, I came in from the outside as an external dean.
Well, one thing that really struck me about your leadership is that you were able to really see opportunities and then move forward even when there was opposition and risk. And one thing that really stands out that is really the focus of our podcast here today is the advent of the Department of Supply Chain Management. You know, we were coming out of a recession, the Great Recession. Some people actually say it was a depression. And the country was struggling. The budgets were tight in the state and the university. And you were wanting to create a brand new department, which is not typically something you would think people would do coming right out of a recession. Would you mind talking about, you know, just how you saw that as an opportunity and just your thought process?
So being someone from the outside, essentially, it's a very analogous to what one would do, you know, in the corporate sector. You come in and so you really don't know many, if any, of the players, and you're not aware of the culture. So eventually you sort of environmentally scan. And so there's an old saying about change that you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so technically, this college of business started back in the 1920s. And I was the first double-digit dean. That is, I was dean number 10 of the Walton College of Business. So there were many great things that had been done before by previous administrations. So taking stock of what seemed to be going well and then looking for opportunities to perhaps try to move the college to the proverbial next level of achievement. So that's sort of the idea in a general sense, is to get a feel for where we are and where we might be. And really, I think an advantage of having been at other universities prior to being here was that I was not locked in to the existing status quo. I was willing to be more experimental and look at other venues, other alternatives.
Well, one challenge with, you know, trying to form a new department is that many times it creates concern amongst administrators. You seem to come up with a algorithm or a process for dealing with that pretty well. Would you mind describing that?
Well, as you know, my academic discipline is management. And so there's a famous model of change by a guy named Kurt Lewin that is very practitioner-oriented in that it just has three steps. In order to successfully implement change, one needs to unfreeze the existing status quo. sort of creating a bit of a disequilibrium. Implement a change is the second step. And then thirdly, refreeze that new situation, the new equilibrium. And so that's sort of a theoretical guidepost that can be very helpful in trying to do this. This is very specific to the situation that was at that time. So I came in 2005 when I joined the Walton College of Business as dean. And there were a number of initiatives that we created under the guidelines of what we at the time call strategic thrust.
Right.
So those were areas that we knew we wanted to try to enhance. And there were a number of those, such as increase our global footprint, enhance our research success, because we're a doctoral-granting business school, and part of our core mission is to not only disseminate existing business knowledge, but also actively engage in the creation of new knowledge. And so I felt that there was an opportunity for us to do more globally, to do more in terms of our research impact. And a third important one, of course, pertained to student success. And outcomes there typically include either getting a great job and or going to an intermediate step, going into a graduate program. So we wanted to facilitate our student success with higher placement rates and those sorts of things as well.
Those are great goals, and people want to accomplish those kinds of things. But a lot of times to accomplish those kinds of things, you've got to take risk.
Yes. So I believe that it's essential for someone in an administrative role that can have a lasting impact is that they not only maintain the momentum that currently exists, but to attempt to keep readiness for change. So when I came in, essentially, the majority of the supply chain group, if you will, were subsumed in an existing academic department, which was marketing and logistics. In one of my previous posts, I happened to have a somewhat similar situation when I was chair of a management department at another university. And in that department, in addition to traditional management folks that might be in organizational behavior or human resources or strategy or international, there were these two more focused cohorts of individuals who focused on one group was healthcare administration and the other one was hospitality management. Well, they were sort of second cousins or something compared to the core group. And there was a feeling in terms of the culture that they weren't as free as they should be to actually dive into their focused discipline because they had to play in this broader pond. And so when I looked at the marketing and logistics department, I saw a very similar thing. I saw that the logistics faculty were expected to contribute in marketing ways, even though that wasn't their home discipline. So to me, that was a misalignment. Then in addition to that, if you look at the immediate surrounding environment in terms of key but external stakeholders, a dean, he or she needs to look at, well, who are the major employers in our region? What are the major businesses in our community? And as everyone knows, at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas, we have Walmart, we have Tyson, we have J.B. Hunt, we have many others. But without a doubt, a common thread that runs through all of those is supply chain. So for me, it became obvious that it would be very beneficial if we could sort of set this group free and enable them to become who they have today actually become.
Well, you know, when I think about leadership, and one model that I really like is John Cotter's model mm-hmm. of leadership. And he always says that, you know, leadership is about setting direction. You clearly did that mm-hmm. and providing motivation. Would you talk a little bit about how you gained alignment?
Some folks that may be listening to this might not be super familiar with the academic environment, but there's a statement that we in academe sure. move at the speed of roadkill. And there's a lot of truth to that in terms of bureaucratic resistance to change. And as you mentioned before, it just so happened that during this time, we were in a big economic downturn. So traditionally, there's a lot of resistance to change in universities, if for no other reason, just to resist change itself. So the idea then was, well, how can we possibly do this with an investment of very few additional resources, but with a potential of a large return on that minimal investment? So the politics of it had to be that I needed to discuss with the faculty members individually, one-on-one, who possibly could become a member of this new department and see if they were indeed interested. So we did have the majority of the group that was in the marketing and logistics department, but we also had some faculty members in another department, information systems, that were more on the operations management side of things, which also naturally aligned with the concept of supply chain. So essentially, I met one-on-one personal interviews, not online or telephone, face-to-face, with each person to ask him or her if we did have such a realignment, would they be in favor of this, or did they have any questions or reservations? You know, we weren't going to force anyone to go into this new unit. We only wanted volunteers. And that actually ended up being a good characteristic of the new culture once the department was created, is that everybody bought in on the front end. So we had a lot of enthusiasm in terms of the possibility. Then those existing people also were embedded in these two departments. So we had to get the department heads of those respective two departments to also buy in. So naturally, they would have concerns about, well, does this mean our budget is going to be cut? Are we going to be hurt in any way? How does this affect us? So there had to be reassurance that this would not have adverse impact on the existing units. So this is all internal to the Walton College, specifically focused on those two departments. Because we are embedded in this other bureaucracy, though, we can't just implement this change. So technically, the way for us to most efficiently do this, the avenue was to actually have a reorganization of existing units rather than the creation of a standalone new unit. I know that's, in effect, that's what we ended up doing, but technically, in terms of moving it through the bureaucracy of this large boa constrictor, I knew that we had to have provost buy-in, who is the person that the dean directly reports to, the chancellor, who is the head of the university here at Fayetteville, the president, who is the head of the system, and the board of trustees. All of those groups, that's the whole scalar chain above the dean, had to all buy into this for this to happen, you see.
No wonder we don't start new departments very often.
Yeah, it's quite an adventure. So that then is all the university players, the faculty who would be involved, the department chairs, and those existing departments, how would they be impacted? Then the buy-in from the senior administration above the dean, and then the whole system and board of trustees buy-in. So all that had to occur. One of the problems was the ingrained resistance to any sort of change, coupled with the economic downturn. So how could we possibly politically position this to help our cause? And so the strategy that we came up with was to contact the senior C-level people, we're talking CEOs, presidents, these sorts of people, from these major corporations, we're talking Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, FedEx Freight, companies like this, to ask those C-level executives who hired our graduates, by the way, if they felt a standalone supply chain department would be useful for them in terms of relationships with faculty that would be in that area, executive education in that area, and probably most importantly, new human capital for them, that is new employees that we would be generating with this focus on supply chain. Well, end of the story is we obtained all the letters that we asked for that strongly supported the creation of a standalone supply chain department. So in effect, these executives were carrying a lot of the water for our initiative. And these companies were also large donors to the university, had a very important footprint for the success of the university as a whole. So that was very effective in getting buy-in throughout the entire senior administration chain of command.
Well, you know, when you look at something like that, first of all, have you ever started a new department prior to that?
I had done reorganizations before, but I can't recall creating a new standalone department. I had created new centers and those sorts of things before, other places, and certainly had worked with the business community before to help facilitate objectives of various colleges of business.
Well, you know, prior to the formation of this department, we graduated about 50 students a year. And of course, now they're graduating, I don't know what the number is, but it's well over 200. It's now, out of the 10 majors in the college, what was a small fragment of one department is now the third largest department in the college based on number of degrees awarded.
Right, Matt. I had a note here that the effective date for the formal beginning of the standalone department was July 1st, 2011. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there were 100 majors in logistics in the Walton College, and there were 4 doctoral students. That was pretty much it. So you probably know the numbers today. How many majors are there today?
Oh, gosh, it's huge. But I just looking at number of students graduating, it went from around 50 to well over 200, around 250, I think it is. So based on the number of students produced, it's gone up about fivefold in that short period of time. And you would think, well, wouldn't that cause problems? Like, if you have that many students, wouldn't placement rates go down? Placement rates went up.
Yes.
We're placing most of the students before graduation. And even for students, you know, there's a lot of supply chain jobs in Northwest Arkansas. But in so many businesses now, especially in consumer packaged goods, even if you're talking about sales, a lot of times they're hiring supply chain majors into sales positions in those companies, because a lot of sales really has to do with supply chain logistics. It's become very quantitative. Not just, it's not like you're trying to convince someone to buy more Cheerios, for example. You know, there's a lot more to it than that, and it's data driven. And a lot of the impediments to sales growth are things like out of stocks, you know, and that's something that can be addressed. But again, you know, I think, and then of course, there's a lot more faculty in the department now. It's grown. Philanthropy to the department's been phenomenal. I mean, since I've been dean in the past 3.5 years, counting my time as interim dean, the largest gift we have received was $7 million to the Supply Chain Management Research Center. Yep. And that doesn't count other philanthropy.
One thing we should probably mention, since you became dean, was that another important thing in the initial creation of the supply chain group, as dean, I had to identify someone who could be the initial department chair. And that had to be someone that was respected by all of the faculty and someone who had the goods, you know, to accomplish the job. And that was you, my friend. Matt Waller was the first department chair of the new supply chain group.
Well, you know, I honestly think thank you for giving me that opportunity. I really had not contemplated something like, because I had never thought we would have our own department, but I remember you really encouraged me to do it, and I know you had confidence in me, and I knew you had a lot of experience and had dealt with a lot of department chairs. I thought, well, maybe I can do it. I'll give it a shot, you know. yeah, thank you so much for that opportunity. It really showed me, because I didn't know I would like administration so much. But as soon as I became department chair, probably within 6 months, I realized, oh, I like this. And I loved working with the faculty and the students and the staff and the other department chairs. And I'd never tried anything like it, so I didn't know. So thank you for the opportunity.
I think for many faculty who go to the dark side of the enterprise, that is, they drift over to administration, that it really is an opportunity to practice some of the concepts that we teach. And it can be very fulfilling and eye-opening as well.
Boy, that is so true. So, Dan, the other amazing thing to me, of course, I know you had some family members that had health struggles, so after 7 years of being dean, you really had to go back and help your mother and your wife, and you went through some very difficult times with them and have come through quite well. And your wife was a lovely person. I personally enjoyed visiting her with her and getting to know her. And you are as active as a faculty member and an administrator as you've ever been now. You're working on research, you're teaching, and amazingly, you're interim department chair, which I know we needed an interim department chair because we wanted to do a national search, and we didn't want anyone in the department to be left out. So we didn't want to make someone interim department chair that would then constrain the process. And you agreed to do it, which I know you didn't want to at first, but you went ahead and did it, and I'm grateful for that. But what, how is it? I mean, you've got so much experience, even as dean, and now you're interim department chair.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to explain. You know, there's an old joke that deans age in dog years, you know, which would mean a multiple of 7 for every year you've been a dean. And I was a dean at 3 different business schools for 15 years. So maybe my willingness to serve as this interim department chair is the function of having so few brain cells remaining. But, you know, I was happy to help you in the department. And, you know, I'm proud of the change that has occurred. Again, not that there weren't wonderful things going on before, but I think the trajectory that I was a part of from 2005 to 2012 as dean, and then there was a person who followed you as dean for 3 years and now currently is the dean at the May School of Business at Texas A&M. So he certainly went on to great things, and now you're dean. And so I think we've generated a lot of administrative success. I mean, just as an aside, my two associate deans, one is currently dean at West Virginia, and the other is dean at the University of South Florida.
And they're both very successful.
Yeah, they're both very successful in all the criterion that you would judge a dean by. So the Walton College, I think, has a strong history and is continuing under your stewardship to do great things.
Well, I know you have a real orientation towards mentoring people. Mm-hmm. You mentored me as a department chair, really before I was a department chair, because you actually, I was just a faculty member when you were dean, but you really started mentoring me when we started the China EMBA program. Yes. And then as we started preparing for the new department, you were teaching me really how to gain alignment in this boa constrictor, as you call it.
Right. Yeah. It is personally rewarding for me to facilitate, to some extent, other people's success. And so you referred to the China thing. As we previously mentioned at the start of our conversation this morning, one of the strategic thrusts pertained to doing more globally. And at that time, 2010-ish, you know, 2007, 2010, a lot of the corporate involvement in China was really accelerating. And so our concept was, well, why can't we be involved? And so you were a key player and actually lived in China with your family for this sort of custom MBA program that we had for folks focused on supply chain, actually, in China. And that was very rewarding in many ways and led to our growth with other international programs over time.
Yeah, that was an amazing time. And I know, of course, Walmart really wanted it. And we had even though it was a single cohort executive MBA type program, we had, you know, several of the top senior people from Walmart China, save the CEO of Walmart China. And we had senior people from Procter & Gamble, Kimberly-Clark, Maersk, and other companies. The head of global procurement for Dillard's, who would fly over to participate. And, you know, one thing that was really interesting about that program was, to your point, we developed a network that was phenomenal. And those people that were in that program, you know, some are with the same companies, some aren't, but they're all in senior positions and global companies, which helps us to this day.
Yeah, so it gave our faculty exposure in that market. It, as you say, it aligned us with people who were moving in their careers into more senior positions, and that's helped us with job placement. It's helped us with our fundraising initiatives. It's been very successful.
It has, and I'll never forget, we would, you know, this program was a year and a half, and students would come in, and classes would start on Fridays and end on Monday nights, and we did that once a month for a year and a half. But one thing that was really unusual about the program, and I remember you were a big proponent of this, was that each student, in addition to having to get their do well in their courses, they had to have a project. And we eventually came to this idea that they had their project had to get at least a minimum of 2 million RMB in economic value add, EVA, to get the degree. And I remember that RMB is the currency, for those of you who don't know. But, you know, I thought that was really neat because it was a way to prove the ROI to the companies, because, you know, it was expensive. It was the tuition was expensive, the travel, because, you know, we would meet in different parts of China. Sometimes we met in Shanghai. Sometimes we met in Shenzhen. We met in Beijing, et cetera, et cetera. And so all these students were having to fly all over the country, and some were coming all the way from the United States. And it was well worth it. There's no question. But the neat thing about your idea of having this ROI for each student was, you know, it was clear it was worth it, you know, because we had to have C-level sign-off on each student's project.
And some of those dollars generated were very substantial, as I recall.
Huge. I mean, way beyond 2 million RMB. But these are big companies, and right. So it was amazing what they could do. And to this day, you know, we're still very in close contact with these companies and people. But, you know, a lot of times, I think, if I remember correctly, when we first started talking about this, Dan, you wanted our faculty to become more globally minded and globally aware.
Yes.
And China is a very important trading partner with the United States and with the state of Arkansas, for that matter. And I remember you said this is a way that we can have real growth. Right. In globalization.
Yes, and so this is sort of just a tangent, but we talked about the success of the two associate deans. And so one of the other strategic thrusts that we had was diversity initiatives. And so there were many things that we did, but why not diversify, in effect, the CEO's office, which is the dean's office as well, you know, to lead by example. And so in the dean's office at the time when we restructured, one of the associate deans was from North Africa, from Tunisia. The other major associate dean was from Mexico. And the chief financial officer was a woman. And so all of a sudden, we had a diverse senior leadership team that was not the case prior. And I think symbolically, that was important in signaling that diversity strategic thrust.
Absolutely.
And we did similar things on research. And if we tie like research back to supply chain or diversity, well, you know, we have in the supply chain department, we have a Brazilian woman, we have a German guy, we have somebody from Netherlands, is it now?
Yeah.
So very globally diverse group. And research-wise, just the status of the supply chain department now in terms of its national ranking, it's in the top 10. So,
yeah, and in fact, I know while I was department chair, I was also editor-in-chief of Journal of Business Logistics, which was our top logistics journal. And the current department chair, Brian Fugit, is editor-in-chief of Journal of Supply Chain Management, our top supply chain journal. That sort of thing, I think, helps the reputation as well. But I think that, you know, we've been fortunate in that we've been able to hire really good faculty members that are well-respected.
Right.
In the country. And not only are they productive researchers, they're also very well trusted by their colleagues throughout the discipline. And I think as a result of that, they have senior positions. So, for example, Remco, Professor Remco van Hoek, is the chair of the board of CSCMP, which is the main professional organization in the discipline, which is pretty amazing that he's got that position. So even currently, if you look at the faculty, they're not only good researchers and teachers, and they're great researchers and teachers, but they're also leading in all kinds of ways, providing service to the discipline.
So if we sort of reflect back a bit on some of the things we said in terms of a broader mosaic, and you think about, well, how can these sorts of change initiatives relate to more of a broader strategic plan? So the lens through which we were viewing the possible creation of a supply chain unit was based upon a broader scope of strategic initiatives. And so the fact that we created this standalone supply chain group touched so many other key points. It touched enhanced research. It touched globalization. It touched diversity. It touched student success in terms of employment. It won on all those multiple dimensions. And when that's the case, that's a strong indicator that you should go for it and take that risk. Even though there's all this bureaucratic resistance, it's tough economic times, it's well worth the risk.
Well, I'm glad that you put you practice what you preach as a management professor. It paid off. Thank you for taking time to visit with me about this. It's really encouraging.
Well, thank you, Matt.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Be Epic podcast from the Walton College. You can find us on Google, SoundCloud, iTunes, or look for us wherever you find your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. You can find current and past episodes by searching Be Epic Podcast, one word, that's BEEPIC podcast. And now, Be Epic.